You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 19th of May 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and of course I'm joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told, and now also the Secret Masonic Victors of World War II. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks. I haven't been too many hours of sleep, but I've been busy this week, but I'm certainly feeling wide awake, so we're ready to go.
Yeah, we're having to record this during the day, so we're all coffeed up. It's half past 12 instead of it being 8 o'clock in the evening, so we should be feeling fairly sharp. I've had three cups of coffee. I'm hoping
any normal person will do, but we're not talking normally, are we, to be honest?
No, we're not. We've got quite a bit to get through today. We should really start with some news, I think. Some news on the revisionist historian Horst Mahler. I'm sure listeners are aware because we've spoken about him before. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison in Germany. While he was in prison, he contracted a serious illness. He then had to be released from prison so that they could saw his leg off. And bear in mind that this guy's over 80 years of age. So they sawed his leg off and he recuperated out of prison for 3 months. And then the German prison authorities demanded that he be taken back to prison to continue his sentence, which is a death sentence, basically. If he's sent back to prison living in a cell in that condition, then his life expectancy is not going to be the length of the rest of the sentence. Now, he's been sent to prison basically for revisionism. The reports that I've seen in the British press say that it's because he did a Hitler salute. So because he raised his arm in a Hitler salute, the guy's been given a death sentence. This is how serious these anti-free speech laws are in Germany. So he, instead of turning up to go back to prison, he headed for Hungary, hoping to plead for asylum personally from Viktor Orban. And Viktor Orban has said nothing. He hasn't spoken about this at all. And he's now been arrested by the Hungarian police. And I've got a translation here from something that was written in German. And this comes from Richard Edmonds. So I'll just read this out so that we get an idea of what's going on. On Wednesday the 17th, the 81-year-old Horst Mahler was pushed into the Budapest court on a wheelchair. The woman judge decided that Horst Mahler must remain in custody for the time being. According to media reports, the court has ascertained that the European arrest warrant issued by the judicial authorities in Munich contains some small irregularities. The German judicial authorities have been given 40 days to clear this matter up. The former RAF lawyer, Horst Mahler, he was a lawyer for the Red Army faction, before he became a revisionist. He was arrested on Monday in Hungary. He wanted to claim asylum in Hungary. Horst Mahler told the court that in Germany he was politically persecuted. Horst Mahler was condemned in 2009 to 10 years of imprisonment for race hatred and Holocaust denial. In 2015, he had been released early on health grounds, but now he must complete his remaining prison sentence. He fled Germany in April of this year and then went underground. Now, I've also spoken to a Hungarian who said that it's only been a very small news story over there in Hungary. And he says that Horst Mahler pleaded personally to Viktor Orban for asylum. Viktor Orban has not responded, apart from, I believe, to say that Hungary is a part of the European Union and therefore Hungary must comply with European Union requests for extradition. So hopefully these irregularities that are in the actual arrest warrant are going to hold this up, hopefully they won't even be able to clear it up in the 40 days, in which case Horst Mahler could then be freed. So it's not all over yet, but it's just extremely disappointing to hear that Viktor Orban isn't going to stand up for Horst Mahler, for speaking the truth. We all think Viktor Orban is great for speaking up about immigration, but we forget that Hungary has just as strict Holocaust laws and just as strict anti-free speech laws as the rest of Europe. What are your views on this, Dennis?
Well, at first glance, I was surprised because I knew of Hungary's feelings about the immigrants and the stand they're taking on it, along with Poland. But then, you know, we see the power, really, of or how powerful the Jews have really become when they can influence so many countries, or bully so many countries into this agreement about the Holocaust thing, and obviously the transferring of prisoners from different countries, or wanted prisoners. It's a difficult one because he will be in kind of a rock and a hard place, the Hungarian president. But at the same time, it's the cruelty we see in front of us is what I was talking about in the new documentary, where the communist persecutions and the national socialists had to flee Europe because of this communist purge, and the Catholic Church helped. My father was one of them. So the purge goes on. This is a quest by communism, i.e. Jewish Bolshevism, to wipe out every single national socialist they find. And if you can find one, even though he's in his later years with an amputated leg, doesn't really mean much to them because they are what they are. And sad, but this is the ongoing purge from World War II, and there's a lot of people still suffering from it.
Well, yes, that just shows you, doesn't it? It wasn't just that they were after the National Socialists from the time, because Horst Mahler was originally a lawyer.
Never stopped.
Yeah, for a lawyer for this left-wing group. And then he discovered that he'd actually been defending what was false, and he'd been following the wrong doctrine. So now he's discovered the truth about World War II, and he's spoken about it. He's being persecuted for this. And the big, really insulting thing about this is when you think of all the Middle Eastern immigrants that are coming into Europe at the moment, that we are being told are claiming asylum from political persecution, because you're not supposed to be able to claim asylum from criminal prosecution unless it's for laws which we don't actually have in Europe. So this is why the homosexuals can claim asylum, because they can say, well, it's not illegal, sodomy isn't illegal in Europe, but it is in Africa, so I'm being persecuted for something which is not illegal in Europe. So that's why they let them in. But this is clearly political persecution. This is exactly what the asylum laws are supposed to be for. Anyone who's being prosecuted, persecuted for their political beliefs, we should be offering asylum to in Europe. These Holocaust laws, these anti-free speech laws, go right against everything that we have been taught we should be proud of for being European, and particularly British. Free speech.
Yeah, well, the thing is with these purges, I don't know whether you've noticed it or not, but they very rarely make the TV, if at all. You know, they're all covertly done, and if it wasn't for the internet, we'd probably struggle to keep track of any. Just like Rockefeller, when David Rockefeller died the other week, nothing in mainstream. This is one of the most powerful men on earth, one of the people, you know, leading the way for the New World Order, has a mention, if any mention at all, certainly on the TV. I never saw any. But, again, just on the internet. So it's all people are walking around doing the shopping, getting the bills paid, all this kind of carry on. And all this has been so slowly and silently going on in the background, just like a number of other things. It's amazing.
Well, they don't want the general public to know about this, do they? They don't want us to know that there are people being imprisoned just for having a different opinion on what happened during World War II. And if you were to say, I have a different opinion to what happened in Srebrenica, to what the government have, and I was locked up for that, people wouldn't believe you. If you were to say, I've got a different opinion on what's happening over in Syria at the moment, and the government have locked me up for 10 years for it. I mean, that's the equivalent of what it is. And when they do report it, they say, for breaking race hate laws, as if the guy's inciting murder against another race, or if he's violent. And he's clearly not. It's just a matter of having a different opinion to the prevailing orthodox one. And that opinion is obviously based on facts. Otherwise, the guy wouldn't have it.
Yeah, well, as we know, it goes deeper than that, because even if it's based on facts, and even if it's based on truth, these Holocaust laws in Germany have... You can't appeal not guilty. You know, you can only appeal, I think it's guilty, please be lenient, or guilty, I'm insane. You cannot plead not guilty. So everything, the complete book is set against you for any kind of fair trial. And they openly admit it, truth is no defence.
Well, this is just it. Previously, you had to prove an intent to commit a crime. You had to prove that you were intending to commit a crime. There had to be the proof there. But what crime is he trying to commit by just pointing out the facts of what happened in history? He's not trying to steal from anyone. He's not trying to physically hurt anyone. He's not trying to defraud anyone. He's just pointing out available facts, such as the numbers, the official numbers of people that died at Auschwitz. It wasn't 6 million. But just pointing that out is somehow a crime.
And it's a proven fact that 6 million didn't die at Auschwitz, even though they brought the figures down, the overall total hasn't come down. 6 million still, you know, they still quote this number. But that, you know, I'm quite sure if you dug that slab up from Auschwitz and took it into the courtroom with you, and slapped it down in front of the judge and said, "Your Honour, it clearly says, you know, that there's 2 or 3 million been wiped off this 6 million, you know, number in you know, 20 years ago." They just turned around and said, "It doesn't really matter." You know, it's 6 million, whether it was or it wasn't.
They say that everything that was determined during the Nuremberg trials, if anyone says that wasn't fact, then that is Holocaust denial. And yet we know that in those trials, the people there were being tortured. The confessions don't add up. They were talking about places that didn't even exist. They were signing confessions written in English when they didn't even speak English. They spoke German. And the Kachin massacre has now been proven since then from the archives in Russia that was carried out by the Russians. And yet that was part of the Nuremberg trial, was saying that the Germans were guilty of that. So in Germany, if you say the Russians were guilty of the Kachin massacre, 20,000 Polish nobles, Christians, then that's Holocaust denial, even though it's been proved that was not the Germans' guilt. They were not responsible for it.
Yeah, I mentioned that in Greatest Story Never Told, and I also mentioned that even though the assumption was now that the Russians did do it, the Soviets, I like to say, did it, the press never actually came out and cleared Adolf Hitler's name. They just completely forgot about that one.
Well, the other thing is that they say, the Holzmaller, the neo-Nazi. And of course, they like to portray neo-Nazis as tattooed thugs. And that's the way they'll portray it. So that in the people's mind, they'll think, there's this neo-Nazi guy there. He's a lawyer. And all these Holocaust revisionists are lawyers or professors, doctors, highly intelligent people. Yeah. highly intelligent people. They're not your mainstream media caricature of a neo-Nazi, and a lot of them don't support National Socialism. They're against Hitler, they're just after the truth. They know that the Holocaust story is false, so they will speak up about that. It's not very many of them, mind, but there are a few that are anti-Adolf Hitler, but will still say that this whole story, this Holocaust story, is a fiction.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why they keep it going, as we know, and that's because, it comes from several angles. They get the sympathy, they loot the victim, and then as soon as anything arises that they don't like, they just come down either with the anti-Semitic law or the Holocaust law, which was, again, admitted by a leading Jew in communism by the back door. They've admitted it themselves. They bring these laws out of the closet just to keep people quiet.
Well, they have to beat us over the head with it all the time. They're calling for this Holocaust education at schools so that nobody must not know about it. It must not be forgotten. Everyone must learn about the Holocaust. We must have a huge Holocaust museum in the middle of London. Every country in Europe that becomes part of the European Union must have a Holocaust museum and a Holocaust day and mandatory Holocaust education in the schools.
Hit the youth straight away, bombard the youth. So
it's a religion, isn't it?
It's the
New World Order religion. And the religion that teaches us to hold truth in the highest regard. Truth is the highest regard, is Christianity.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a whole new subject, is that one. Because we know from even from that first episode when I just did, that the lies what have been told about World War II and what happened in Soviet Union with the Russian Revolution was a complete farce, the invasion of the palace and all this, and all the lies would have been told. And yet it was the Bolsheviks who came up with the Holocaust when they turned up at Auschwitz and immediately decried that there was gas chambers and all these horrors would have taken place, and took it upon themselves to build a chimney and picked up momentum over a number of years, and then eventually people all got the picture and said, yes, this is the way to go. And now we've got this greatest lie of all by the Bolsheviks being established as true to our kids, and probably their kids and their kids as well.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? This was all dreamt up behind the Iron Curtain. These camps couldn't be investigated because they were behind the Iron Curtain. And the Soviets just came out with these horror stories and confirmed them. And then
the West followed as well. At one point, they said that every camp, America and Britain jumped. Oh yes, all these camps in the West, we've found evidence of these gas chambers. Well, slowly but surely, these have been investigated, proven to be false, but still, not one Eastern Bloc camp has been allowed to be investigated. And I'm quite sure if they were, we'd have some fun and games.
Well, the ones that are put forward to us as this is where the gassings occurred, it's quite clear that there's been alterations made to them since the war to try and confirm this fairy tale, basically. Like the holes that have been put in the roof so that they supposedly threw the gas pellets through these holes. I mean, that's just ridiculous, isn't it? Right, throwing pellets through holes in the roof, and supposedly this gas came up from the pellets, which you would have to heat up anyway. A story of gas coming from showers. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, people still believe these myths of the shrunken heads and the tattoos and all this garbage what came out after World War II, just like the garbage what came out after World War I. But it sticks. It sticks. I mean, even the Jews themselves have denied that the soap never happened. It was all propaganda. And yet, people still believe it today, and the Jews will still push it today. I saw one guy giving a class in a school on YouTube, and he's talking away there about how they turned his mother and father into a bar of soap.
Well, I've seen recently on BBC one of the prosecutors from the Nuremberg trials talking about the soap and lampshades. And yet that has been proved to not be true. But because that was part of the part of the verdict at the Nuremberg trials, Germany, you can't say that.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but I've got to tell you this before I forget, because this absolutely amazed me. You just mentioned the BBC. Sorry for interrupting, but I've got to tell you this. At Manchester City Football Club, there's a player they signed from Brazil. He's a young star, and his surname is Jesus. It's spelt exactly the same as Jesus is spelt. And yet, I was watching the match at day on Saturday, and the commentator would not pronounce the name Jesus. Instead, he would say, Jesus. I mean, this is a Freemason stronghold, the BBC, refusing to say the word Jesus on a Saturday night. Where do they get Jesus from?
Well, they also insist on pronouncing the foreign words in the way that the foreigner would pronounce them, instead of in the way that they would be pronounced in the English in the English language. I think it would be much better if we did pronounce all these words in the English language.
I mean, it's always been Jesus, been Jesus. But to me, I don't think they want 10 million viewers every night, every Saturday night to listen to that name. That's my call on it. But where he got Jesus from, I'm not even convinced to say that in Brazil, to be honest.
Well, BBC are notoriously Christophobic.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. But sorry for interrupting you, but I just have to throw that one in. Maybe somebody out there can throw some more light on that one. But it's a Freemason organisation, so...
That's all right. It's all on the same subject. Yeah. And saying that, Christianity holds truth in the highest regard. Christ said that he was the way, the truth, and the life. And Christianity should be about the search for truth. Because if you are searching for the truth, you're a genuine truth seeker, then I believe you will eventually come to Christ, because you'll look into it and you'll discover that is the truth. So I don't have anything against anyone that is a genuine truth seeker. They're doing what we were created to do, which is to seek out the truth. And this Holocaust narrative goes so far against that. It's central. It's the central opposition to Christianity. And as you showed in your latest documentary, Dennis, Christianity is what they wanted to shut down. Now, I noticed that there were some comments. I had a look over the YouTube comments before we started recording this. And there was somebody saying that, if it was a Christian war, then these other Christian countries wouldn't have been against the Axis. But the thing is that the people in those countries formed part of the Waffen-SS. Even Britain had a Waffen-SS unit, because these people did know that this was a war against Christianity. And that's why they joined these units and were fighting against atheist, godless Bolshevism. And the image that we used last week for Truth Without Radio shows this. The propaganda image shows the communists kicking down the cross and going towards the cross to defend the cross, to fight against this giant communist, the hordes, are all these different European flags defending the cross. So it was seen as a war against Christianity. And those that were in the know, that knew the truth, they joined the Axis powers. They joined the Waffen-SS groups, and they went and they fought on the Eastern Front against communism. And that's why the Muslims joined as well, isn't it? Because it was against godless communism.
Yeah, I mean, the Waffen-SS, as we know, after the war ended, were the ones treated worse than any, because these were the actual leaders in that battle, if you like, But certainly, I think it's the same guy you're talking about, and he brings this up. But I said to him, you've got to understand that Christianity at that time, was different to how people think of Christianity today. There was a reason why Hitler's mother was devout and other people were devout. I mean, my father was a devout Catholic. So, we are living in a different time span. But it didn't even have to be Catholic or, as you said, even Muslims joined in. And the Protestants, there was no grey areas at that point. The second coming of Genghis Khan was about to, invade Europe. And whether you were Protestant, whether you were Muslim, whether you were Catholic, they didn't want their religion destroyed and joined together to fight this heathen horde, which was funded by our friends over there in Wall Street.
Well, one of the successes that the National Socialists had in Germany was uniting the Protestant and the Catholic churches together in their drive towards positive Christianity.
Well, when you look at Ireland, what an incredible feat that was. We had a 20-odd year war with Catholics and Protestants. Incredible.
Well, they didn't manage to get it sorted out in the 40s. Germany managed to get it sorted out. They managed to get out their Catholic and Protestant problems. They managed to get them sorted out through National Socialism 70 years before we were able to in Britain.
And I'm not convinced they're totally solved now. I mean, to me it's a ceasefire, but it could kick off again at any time. Nothing's really been solved as such. But certainly the forces came together in World War II. And all this, you see, has been swept under the carpet. I mean, I wouldn't know this myself if I wasn't told by my father. If I don't know anybody what was taught, what I was told at school, which means that nobody was taught it. And it wasn't taught for a reason. And it's been swept under the carpet for a reason. So, and Christianity has been demonized, infiltrated, and is looked on today by a lot of people as just a non-entity. And it's a reason for it, because obviously they want to take out the white race. They want to take out its main orc, which was Christianity. And, eventually people will realize it's too late, because we've been hidden from all this knowledge. Luckily, my father told me, and then obviously you go to this new documentary and you see what went on in the Soviet Union. There's worse to come. There's worse to come in Poland and in the Ukraine. There's still, it's just a hell on earth in Europe at that time. But us across the channel in England, quite easy to keep all that news from us. I don't think hardly anybody's taught anything about, the famine in the Ukraine at school. And certainly I found some footage of, when the Ukraine did get independence and it was looking to borrow from the banks in the West, they sent over Foxman and his JDL crew. They went over into the Ukraine. And I've got footage of a meeting they had over there where he specifically states, do not mention your Holocaust alongside our Holocaust. It is counterproductive. In other words, you won't get no money. And the guy who was in charge of the Ukrainian side says, yes, I understand. And then right at the very end of this little piece is Foxman's wife, who is literally saying to the camera, we have to play on this guilt. We've got to play on this white guilt.
That's the basis of all of it, is making up this fake story so that they can place a guilt trip on white people and prevent us from rightfully criticizing Jewish influence in our political affairs, in our education, and throughout society. That's where this negative influence comes from. Hey, this is something that people don't realize so much, Dennis. The fact is that you got all of this from eyewitness testimony from your father, who saw all of this happen, who was fleeing from communism at the end of the war. That's how he came to Britain. We did a whole program on it, if people want to look that up, where you retold the story of your father's escape and how you first became aware of all of this. But that's what it is. It's eyewitness testimony that you've heard from your own father that inspired you to look into all of this and make these documentaries. So it is the truth that you were saying, because I notice in the comments you still get people doubting the Christian influence and that the National Socialists were Christian, and that's become a big part of your documentary making, is showing that that the National Socialists were Christian. And I think that's a very important thing to do.
It's cornerstone to it all, yeah, because once you understand that, then the rest falls in, everything happens from that day to this day, all falls into place. It's the reason why, you know, they won't say Jesus on BBC. You know, the reason why, you know, religious education in Britain means nothing these days, and the gay fraternity, probably the happiest time they've ever had, living over here in a replica of what was Babylon.
Right, so it's like Weimar all over again, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's shocking, that clip that you've got from the first series, the extra episode where you're talking about what was going on in Weimar at the time, with the prostitution and
the sex clubs. Yeah. And, unbelievable.
And it's going on again, isn't it?
That wasn't an anti-Weimar documentary. The actual documentary wasn't that scathing at all. In fact, many times, some of the people interviewed would laugh along, saying that, oh yes, you can get any kind of sex, any kind of prostitute, and you know, you can have, you know, these ugly prostitutes and pregnant prostitutes. And he was laughing away. He wasn't condemning it. So I just could not, you know, not use it.
Well, they thought it was wonderful, didn't they? They thought it was absolutely wonderful what was going on there, mother and daughter, prostitutes, people having to prostitute themselves because they would starve otherwise. Yeah. And we've got, it's similar today in Europe, in Germany, with the relaxation of prostitution laws, where if you're unemployed and you don't go for a job in a topless bar, then you'll get your money taken away from you. How long is it going to be before, if you don't go for a job in a brothel as a prostitute, they'll take your money away?
I think it's gone right back to it now, because there are bestiality brothels now in Germany. And I mean, it doesn't sink any lower than that one. Merkel's, you know, quite happy to, you know, leave these laws to be made available now. And no doubt it'll probably get worse, but I noticed, you know, that paedophilia, you know, has been again being pushed. This is the last great bastion. And if people don't come away to this one, then, you know, our kids won't just suffer with just by hearing made up lies down the centuries. They will be suffering physically and mentally, because this is the last bastion of what I call morality.
Well, they
can't help them kids, you know, who's going to help them?
They're constantly trying to make excuses for it and prepare the ground for that in the soap operas, I've noticed. Whenever they have an incident like that, they will always try and place the blame on the child for seducing the adult.
Yeah.
They'll condemn paedophilia as being wrong, but they will still always try and show that it's the child's fault. And the innocent adult shouldn't be being punished for this. But it seems to me that Germany, because Germany was able to throw off the shackles of the money power and was able to hold themselves to a high moral standard and get rid of the prostitution and encourage marriage and encourage children and get rid of all the perversity. Because of that, they're now having so much of it pushed on them. Now, as you say, Germany's got bestiality brothels. You're forced to go for jobs in topless bars unless you're going to lose your unemployment benefit. It seems that they're just doing all they can to punish Germany. They try and rub Germany's nose in it for daring to fight back, daring to resist against this tyranny.
Suffer more than anybody. And people who suffer that illusion of, you know, that it's quite easy for people to turn around now, but look at Germany. They're doing well for themselves, you know, the powerhouse of Europe again, but they don't realise that this is only just to feed Israel, because as the EU President Schulz, the Jew, once said, you know, Germany only exists to serve Israel. And you can say that about many of the nations, to be honest, because we are all paying tribute. I've got to be, you just reminded me of a little bit of research I did, believe it or not, this week, where in 2009 or 2013, can't quite remember, but there was a beauty contest in America where Miss California was asked a question by a gay man. All these contestants were asked different questions by different people. And this gay man asked the contestant from, I think it was Miss California, about marriage. Do you believe that marriage should be of a man and a woman, or, you know, it should be open to all people and all genders? And she turned around and actually said that, well, we live in America now, and it's good to see a free society where people can have the choice. But I was brought up, to be perfectly honest, that marriage was between a man and a woman, and all hell broke loose. And I'm telling you this story because, lo and behold, it showed a clip of Obama before he was president, and he was asked the same question, and Obama was giving it, a marriage should be between a man and a woman.
Well, yes, so they will say anything to get into power, won't they?
That's like exactly. Just like he said about the Holocaust, that his granddad discovered all the bodies, the gas bodies in Auschwitz, and spent 6 months up in the attic. This is the President of the United States talking in a speech in Poland somewhere, and then we find out, but hang on a minute, the Americans never got anywhere near Auschwitz. It was the Russians who liberated the place. So... Well, does the line ever stop?
I don't think there were any blacks involved in liberating any of the camps.
No, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not 100% certain on that.
The United States, though, lying through his back teeth. This is, you know, incredible.
Well, what you were saying there about him changing his tune on homosexuality, that's the same as David Cameron. There was nothing in the Conservative manifesto about pushing for gay marriage. And yet, as soon as the Conservatives won the election, that seemed to be what the whole of David Cameron's term was about, was pushing gay marriage, ensuring that was forced through.
And same with Blair.
And if somebody speaks against that, and just look around us, at the natural world, what do we see? We see males mating with females to create offspring. And that is what's natural. That is the pattern that we see throughout us in every species in the animal world. Males get together with females and produce offspring. We don't see males getting together with males.
The male's a dominant being as well. You know, we don't have loads of female, you know, running around like dominating male in the animal world.
Once you start with pushing an obvious lie as the truth, and that gets accepted, then from that, it's like a snowball. It would just pick up more and more and more lies. We were lied to about World War II. We were lied to about the Holocaust. We were lied to about homosexuality. We were lied to about the races all being the same. We were lied to about miscegenation being a good thing. Yeah, everything. It all springs from that one court case, that one lie where it was established that lies were the truth. It was established that they didn't need to check the witness accounts. They didn't need to hold the accounts to the same scrutiny as you would normally do in a court case. Any evidence that would have defended them, they were not allowed to put forward. They rigged the entire court to come out with a false decision at the end of it, a false verdict at the end of it, and then forced everyone to accede to that lie with the threat of a prison sentence. And once they'd done that, I mean, that set a precedent. You could then lie as much as you liked after that if you were convinced that you were lying for the good of everyone else. I mean, that's what these people thought. It was for the good of everyone else that we lie.
Well, that actual case, that court case, you know, the Nuremberg thing, was the first time ever. I mean, normally what happens is two countries, whatever countries that have a war, want to get beat and hold their hand up, and whatever came. But certainly they all went back home, you know, to live life and carry on. I mean, a soldier's told, he's given orders what to do. If he doesn't do these particular orders, then he's got a problem himself. And this has been understood for thousands and thousands of years. What happens now, like, though, is that we have these high morality Hague court cases where we have hardly any war criminals being, put up in front of a judge, because the only war criminals that ever do get up in front of the judge are the ones that the New World Order defeat. I mean, the blacks of Blair and Bush and everybody else just walk as if there's, you know, nothing's actually happened, where in fact these are actual war criminals. And they use this criminal war tribunals to make not only themselves look good, but also gives them the air of superiority that we are the moral leading and moral standing in the world. And it's to be quite frank, it's bullshit.
Well, it also set the precedent that you could have an international court, whereas before mm-hmm. that, you had a national court. Each different nation, each different country had its own laws and customs. And if you were in a war, you had to obey your superiors. You had to obey your government. If you went against what your government said, you were breaking the law in your own country among your own people. And the precedent they've set now is that we have to obey the New World Order. You shouldn't obey the laws of your own country. If you obey the laws of your own country and they go against what the laws of the New World Order are, then we're going to set up this international court, which has no jurisdiction whatsoever. All the other courts, the national courts, are set up through the crown, and the crown is given its power by God. The international court, there was no international court. There was no international king. The king is Christ. And if the king is Christ, the international king is Christ over the whole world, then it's his law that matters. And in his law, truth is supreme.
Problem is, they don't recognize God.
Well, where do they get their authority from for these courts, these international exactly. courts? Where is the authority? The only authority they have is coercion, threat, violence, and coercion.
Which is true, yeah.
That's what it boils down to. It just boils down to brute force. Whereas before, when we had national courts, it went down to tradition, oaths, fear of God, Christian law, culture and traditions that we've had for thousands of years. Now we have this falsehood that's called British values. Tolerance for sodomy.
Yeah.
Encouragement for race replacement. These aren't British values. British values, British culture is based on freedom of speech and holding the truth to be supreme. Now the truth is not supreme. The truth, we're told, is a lie. We have to say that 2 + 2 = 5. Black equals white. Black and white are equal. Good and evil are equal. Yeah. It all goes back to the Kabbalah, really.
The Luciferian doctrine.
Yeah.
Good is bad and bad is good. And God is the devil and the devil is God.
It's now reflected in it throughout the whole of culture, saying that discrimination is a bad thing. Discriminating between good and evil is the first point of all learning is discriminating between what's good for you and what's bad for you.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I go back to the children were suffering again. I mean, this gender thing, that again comes from that same thing. Whereas, you know, kids now are being told not to think of themselves as boys and girls till they're, you know, at least 14, 12, 13, 14. Utterly satanic. But utterly this Luciferian doctrine, which is, as you just said, is good is now evil and evil is now good.
Well, they're told that they can decide what gender they want to be. And we've seen a massive, massive increase in girls thinking that they're boys now. And they think that's wonderful.
Well, you always had some boys then, didn't you? But, I mean, that didn't necessarily mean that they were lesbian. You just had some girls who liked to climb trees.
they usually grew out of it. And you always had tomboys. Yeah. Didn't necessarily become lesbians. Usually become lesbians because there'd been abuse of some kind. It'd been an abusive father or an abusive male somewhere along the line, and these lesbians. The idea of sex often didn't really come up. It would just be two old women that lived together. The sex thing is, it wasn't so important for them. It's not. I don't think the lesbians are equivalent to the sodomites, but with the advent of this gay pride and the promotion of homosexuality, you've now got this butch lesbian, butch dyke thing in your face, trying to be as masculine as possible. And they're not masculine, they're just aggressive. Men are assertive, not aggressive.
Exactly. I saw a YouTube video once of one, she must have been at least, you know, 20 stone, kicking off with a guy who was half her weight at least, and she was certainly forceful and in his face, and there was a lot of comments underneath saying what should this guy should have done, should he have hit her, should he have not said anything, should he, you know. And I just put a little comment on golden rule always has been, well, my golden rule always has been, Act like a man, treated like a man.
Well, this is it. They talk about equality all the time, but there is no actual equality. Women are now shielded from the consequences of their actions, and they're pretending to be men all the time. What's the point in a woman trying to be a man? Women are women. They have the greatest gift. They can produce children.
Yep. You know,
men can't do that. Men have another role to play.
I think they're trying to prove that one wrong. In the world, trying to be God. I think they might have even. I'm quite sure I've seen a picture of a pregnant man somewhere.
Well, again, that's a mutilated woman, isn't it? That's a woman that's taken hormones and had surgery to deform her body and try to make her look like something else. And this is all brought about through confusion. That's what this changing the gender is. It's confusion, isn't it? It starts with somebody being confused about their gender. And if you tell children that they can make their own mind up about what gender they are, that's sowing the seeds of this confusion, isn't it? That's causing it.
Like sowing the seeds of Babylon, for sure. And I've said this from day one when we first started doing these radio interviews, that's where we're heading. There's certain people have handed down through generation upon generation, and they've gone, they know quite well that it will not be completed in their lifetime. But they've adamantly stuck to this task covertly, secret societies, whatever, and they've got to a point now where these Babylonian descendants or lovers of that lifestyle are now on the verge of bringing it back. The documentary will go into the biblical side of it at one point just to show what these occult and these Freemason societies really do believe. You know, people might be a little bit unaware of all this, but that's going to be coming in a documentary as well soon.
Well, I'm just reminded of something Alexander Dugin said that he spoke about where we were heading. And now we've gone through beyond gender, transgender. The next thing is transhuman. And what is transhuman? Mm-hmm. It means to go beyond what it means to be human. And what is it to be human? It means to be humane. It means to be a humane being. Justice, mercy, charity. All these things that are associated with being humane, it means to go beyond that. So it means to go beyond the truth and to exalt the lie instead of the truth.
Well, interestingly enough, I was listening to Tex Myers this week, and he did a lot of study about robotics. He's actually well-versed in it as well. And he says that for all these, all the immigrants and everything else, like, they're not really the main problem, because he said he actually burst into tears at one point in his research when he realized that these robots, what they're building, will replace mankind. And if I could just briefly tell you a little story what he said, he was on about China. At the moment, there's 200,000 working, well, there was 200,000 working in this complex in China. And life was so miserable there, 12 hours a day, go to sleep, get up, $2 a day pay. Eventually, they started jumping off the roofs to kill themselves. This guy, not happy about the situation, put a net around the buildings to stop people from jumping off them. But consequently, people still killed themselves. They were so miserable. So he decided to replace these people with robots. And he's actually replaced 100,000 of these people with robots. And these robots can do the work of 10 men. And they can also make new robots. And there's no back chat. There's no, strike. There's, everything. They can work 24/7. And consequently, he believes they will replace the human race. He thinks it is the end of the human race. And when I listen to the rest of what he was saying, I really can't see where it's coming from, because these people are just interested in money. And if that means getting rid of the human race and replace them with robots, one will tell you, good morning, sir. How's your day feeling? But it's actually as cold and dead as a psychopath would be, then that's the world they'll be happy to live in without us.
Well, that's just typical of everything we see around us, isn't it? Instead of dealing with the causes of the problems, they just try to ameliorate the symptoms. Instead of dealing with the causes of people jumping off the building, he puts a net around it. Instead of dealing with the causes of people turning into homosexuals, we say, homosexuality is fine. It's fine that these children have been abused by pedophiles, because when they become a homosexual as an adult, that's absolutely fine. We'll celebrate that. We won't prevent homosexuality, so children don't get abused by homosexual pedophiles. We'll legalise homosexuality and make that out to be a wonderful thing. And just to go to the robotic side of it, Dennis, I've been reading a book about the ancient folklore and traditions of Wales. And before we had the introduction of this machinery, everybody used to work together. We used to work together in the fields. We had this wonderful sense of community. We had all these customs where people would go around to each other's houses, dressed up, asking for money for a wedding. People would be sharing the food. There was all these traditions that they had while they would be cutting the corn. And at the end of it, they'd have this corn dolly and there'd be beer brought out and supper. All these community traditions that we had and all this folklore that was mixed up and involved in with it. And as soon as we came into this industrial age where we had these machines that would do the work instead, we lost all the culture, all these traditions. We lost all these customs. We lost our sense of community. And did it make life easier? Did any of it make life easier? No, we now work for longer hours than we ever did before. We only used to work the hours of daylight, and half the year we had off for religious festivals.
Well, let's face it, since the PC era, it's gone even worse. You know, there's no community at all now. It's just everyone just stops in. Don't even go out on a Saturday night, most people now, because it's either too expensive or they can't smoke in a pub. And as soon as stop at home and get some drinks, and you've got a computer or you've got a television, which is going to keep you in there. It's just gone absolutely, you know, from what I knew life was at one point when I was younger, obviously, you know, it's totally different today and what it's going to be like for next generation, who knows. But certainly this robot thing is something to consider and worry about, because I can remember watching the films like Terminator and Total Recall, and you think it's science fiction when in actual fact it ain't that far away.
I count myself lucky that I was brought up in a time when there wasn't an internet, because we did still have a sense of community. We did still have country pastimes. Much as I do think the internet is a wonderful thing because of all the information that we've been able to find from it, and all the computerized stuff and the television screens, I do count myself lucky that, you know, I was told to get out there and play, not sit there in front of the television on a Saturday morning. Get out there and play with your friends. I think I'm very lucky.
Interestingly enough, what they've done, I didn't realise this the other day, so the wife actually said, she came in at one point, I think it was on a Sunday, and it could have been a Saturday, I'm not sure, but it didn't really matter. Just say, for instance, it was on a Sunday. She came in and she mentioned something which I normally wouldn't think about on a weekend, because normally my way of process of thinking is if I work during the week, then that's the time to worry about work, and I'll worry again about Monday morning when that comes around. But meanwhile, on the weekend, I'm just going to enjoy myself. So I actually turned around to her and I said, whoa, it's Sunday. What are you bringing all this up for? And she actually turned around and said, I work Sundays. And I realised then they've even stolen that time away from work, because now every day is the same.
Oh, yeah, incredible. Especially if you've got email connection. Your boss is going to expect you to check your emails. You've got your smartphone. You can be contacted at any time and asked to account for yourself with a phone. Before then,
that day rest, which who gave us a day rest? God.
Well, the Sunday was also very important as well. When you had the Sunday, nobody was at work, so you wouldn't hear all that industrial noise.
I could go outside, I could hear a pin drop.
You're lucky if you get that at Christmas now. It used to feel like Christmas once a week when Sundays were still kept special.
It took that away.
Do you know what encouraged that, Dennis? It was the immigration and then all the Pakis and Indians wanting to open up their shops and saying, look, the white people then said, we're going to have to open up on Sundays because otherwise we're going to lose all our custom to these Indians who are prepared to open up for the longer hours.
And the people who brought him in would have known that. That all would have been pre-planned. You know, they're not stupid, these people. They're bringing these immigrants. They know exactly what's going to happen. It's all pre-planned. So, yeah, you know. But how bad is that, though, when they're stolen that day?
Oh, well, we've lost what we used to be. England used to be a nation of shopkeepers. And now all the shopkeepers in England are Indian and Pakistani.
Or Tesco's.
Yeah, it's we forget what it was like. We used to be able to go up a shop and you would talk and you'd find out all the local gossip, you'd find out all the local news, and again there'd be the sense of community. Now you go into a local shop and it's but. All they want is to just take your money and kick you out.
You do a great Indian accent.
but.
It is true. And people are more isolated than ever. You know, like I said, you know, people don't wear it as much here. You know, certainly the places to go don't exactly enthrall you to go. I mean, once we had a selection of places, now it's, you know, you can't smoke, you know, there's violence or there's something out there that's affecting people and they just go into themselves. I think that started particularly during the 80s. I started to feel that one.
Well, let's try and bring it on to some more positive news. We've got, you know, 10 minutes to go here now. So what's going to be coming up in part two? When can we expect to see part two of the new series, Dennis?
Well, they usually take, if I get a clear run, they usually take around 3 weeks to complete because there's a lot of behind the scenes producing and trying to, you know, get things as simple for people to understand. And that's not always easy because it can complicate things. So I'd say about 3 weeks. I do think I've got the start of it now, like where I've got some great footage of the Bolsheviks once they won this internal war with the White Army. Don't waste much time in getting the revolution, you know, on this worldwide conquest. So Poland was one of the first ones. And all this is building up to the point where we were talked about it last week, where Stalin was massing the biggest army ever to invade Europe at one point, which is totally obliterated from all our suburbs. Never, in fact, he never got in them. And people will understand. I mean, if you were just to say to somebody, oh, Stalin was again the big army to invade Europe, it doesn't really mean nothing as such to somebody. But once you see what the Bolsheviks did in their own country, then they went into Poland, they went into Ukraine and on and on and on, and other revolutions were taking place at the same time as well, then it's not surprised to see a massive army on Europe's border, especially when Churchill's gone cap in hand to Roosevelt, who was made, you know, Joe, a word to the American public as Uncle Joe. Now, I've always said that this link, because many people can't understand why we link with Soviet Union, but you said last week, the link, as you can see now, is Freemasonry. Now, as soon as Churchill goes to Roosevelt and said, Mr. Roosevelt, we need you because we just had our ass kicked in, France has been taken over, and we just got booted out of Dunkirk, we need you again, like as in World War One. Well, I can't, Winston, sorry, I've just been to, you know, I've looked at the ratings and 99% of Americans don't want to go to war. So you're going to have to just hang on a bit, or we can't wait that long. I'll get in touch with Uncle Joe. Is that an impossibility? No, because we know what Freemasons do.
Well, it seems to be what it was. And we also had the Jews calling for war as well and helping out with their propaganda machine. And I think and then Roosevelt.
As soon as Germany invaded, Roosevelt then jumps in with his, you know, all his let's get arms and keep them in the war and all this kind of carry on. And Britain does the same, and they keep the Soviet Union in the war till he can get his little scheme called Pearl Harbor, where overnight, from 90% of people not wanting to go to war, suddenly 99% of people want to go to war.
Now, I was just going to ask how it was that they changed that. I was thinking it was with the Jewish propaganda. There was also the Pearl Harbor incident as well. I actually got the timing wrong there, Dennis. We're coming up near the end of the podcast now. Do you want to let people know where they can find your work before we finish?
Yeah, well, the usual documentaries you can find at the websites cummingsandbythebackdoor.tv or greatstorynevertold.tv. But the new series, which, as I said, a couple of weeks probably till the next Part two is ready. Is on YouTube, but it's had something like 8,000 hits in 4 days. So I'm quite happy with that. And the reaction, most people, is very favourable.
Yeah, yeah, that's really good. 8,000 hits. And also Schmidt's Axis War Hero series, that's up to almost touching 5,000 on his most really? Recent one. Yeah, yeah. He's working on doing Adolf Galland at the moment, so that should be available Brilliant. Soon as well. So yeah, thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget, we do appreciate donations, and we do have a Bitcoin wallet, and we do have overheads here. We would like to get Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson a new microphone if we can. So if anyone wants to help donate to that to help to pay the server costs, then check out the Bitcoin wallet. That's at radioarian.com. We'll also be repeating everything that we've played for you this week over the weekend on the live stream. So check that out. I'll be back on Monday with the Daily Traditionalist. So until then, we hope you all have a wonderful weekend.
Radio.